coming up today on the Steve Freeman Podcast, we're going to be talking about music industry math. I've gotten a lot of questions from you guys. Plus, I got into a little something with somebody the other day on Instagram. So I thought, man, you know what? This would make a great episode. So we are going over music industry math today in the Steve Freeman Podcast.
You're listening to the Steve Freeman Podcast, the real, raw truth about the pursuit of success in music, business, and life. Here's your host, hit songwriter, multi-platinum selling producer, and serial entrepreneur, Steve Freeman.
Hey, everybody, welcome back to another episode of the Steve Freeman Podcast. So good to have you here. While you're here, don't forget, rate, review, and subscribe to the podcast, especially if you're listening on Apple Podcast. Take 60 seconds to leave us a written review. Leave us those 5 stars. I greatly appreciate it. Happy Friday. Hope everybody's looking forward to heading into the weekend. We made it, guys. There was a successful, non-eventful presidential inauguration. Regardless of how you feel about it, it's over. It's done. It's now time to move on to other things. I posted on Facebook the other day, so many people giving Garth Brooks shit over singing Amazing Grace at the inauguration. I didn't have a problem with it. I mean, you're an entertainer, you get asked, it shouldn't matter what political party that you are a member of or that you support. He was asked to come sing Amazing Grace. He did so beautifully and exited. And now people are like, oh, Garth Brooks is the new Dixie Chicks. Like, we're going to be out, you know, burning Garth Brooks records or something. Seriously, folks. And I said on Facebook, look, if politics and Trump versus Biden, Republican versus Democrat, if that is what's taking up a large part and majority of your emotional and mental state, you have got to find something more meaningful in your life. Seriously, there are so many more things that affect us on a day-to-day basis than what goes on in Washington. Now, we can choose to allow it to affect us, which a lot of us have. But I said on Facebook, it's like, man, I'm going to be blocking, removing, unfriending a lot of people. I'm over it. I'm ready to move on. Doesn't mean that I support one person or the other. I've said this before in podcasts. I'm all about what benefits me, what benefits my family. Much other than that, I really don't care. I just don't. If it doesn't affect me directly, I just really don't care. Now, if it comes to something that does affect me, I will jump in, I'll weigh in. But if not, I have the capacity in my brain, our brains, is limited enough as it is with day-to-day things, life. Life kicks us in the balls constantly. I try to avoid that more than I care about who's sitting in the White House. So, we head into a weekend. I hope you all had an amazing week. What we are going to talk about today on the podcast, as I've said, we're not going to be talking about the music business a lot. I feel like I want to run down something because of an episode that we had where I talked to you about 2021 a couple of weeks ago, well, before the new year. And I told you that YouTube was going to be a major part of my strategy and what I was going to be doing in 2021 and beyond. And I kind of told you why, but I want to go back through and we're going to do music industry math. So I'm putting my Professor Steve hat on today and I am holding math class. Now I was horrible at math. Literally I was horrible at math. I remember my senior final, my algebra teacher, I remember sitting down. I think I did maybe 20%, 30% of the questions. I got the test back and I got a B. And I went up and I asked my teacher, Mr. Spradlin, I said, how is this even possible? I didn't even finish the test. And he looked at me and he goes, I've never said this in my 40 years of teaching, but you, sir, will never need math. And whatever it is you're going to go on and do, you're not going to need math and I'm not going to let it hold you up. So here's your passing grade. Good luck with the rest of your life. Nevertheless, as I've gotten older and because of being in the music industry, you need to be good at math. You need to understand the dollars and cents, because let me tell you something. The music business, the music industry is a game and a business of cents. It is not dollars. And I want to walk through some things with you guys today to help you understand the economics of the industry, which will also play back into why I'm focusing more on YouTube in the future. Now, I get that where this all started was how Instagram is doing now, where once you reach the bottom of the feed of the people that you're following, now it's suggesting all these other people. Well, there was another guy who is just getting started in his journey, in the business and is trying to put content out there to help people. I believe it's either a podcast or a YouTube channel. I think it's a YouTube channel. Anyway, he interviewed this girl, this writer, songwriter. And the clip that he had put up said she was saying in there that, you know, she was looking for and finding alternative ways to make money in the business because she was in a co-writing session with a friend of hers who had cuts on Britney Spears and I don't remember who the other people were she was talking about. And she was talking about fixing the system, the royalty system, and how this girl was telling her in this co-write session that, you know, I have cuts on Britney's. I have cuts on the biggest artist in the country, but yet my ASCAP statement I get, you know, every quarter and it's $300. And I felt like I needed to comment on that because that is not an ASCAP, BMI, CSAC royalty issue. That right there, why that happens is that is a product and it's creeping into Nashville right now, by the way. The reason that she can have cuts on Britney Spears and all of these other pop acts, biggest acts in the world, and only make $300 every quarter on her ASCAP statement is because the LA way of writing, there may be 7 writers on that song. The producers usually get added. There may be 2 or 3 producers. By the time that gets done, go look at a Beyonce record. There are 12, 13, 14, 15 writers on every song. So even if that song every quarter was generating $20,000, let's just say it's $20,000 every quarter. And let's say there's 10 writers. That $20,000 is getting split 10 different ways. And then if you have a publishing deal, you're not getting any of it or very little of it, 50% of it maybe. That's how that happens. That's how you can have mega hits on mega artists and never make any money from it. So a lot of you and us, I was this way once, you think, oh man, getting that major artist, that major label cut that actually makes it through, goes out as a single and does well, it's high lifetime. I'm going to make money. Well, that all depends. How many people did you write the song with? Where did it get airplay? Where did it not get airplay? How many copies did it sell? How much money in mechanical royalties did it generate? It is entirely possible for that scenario to happen. And that scenario happens more so than any other type of scenario. I've got a friend who has cuts with Pitbull, Chris Brown, Lifehouse, some of the biggest acts in each different genre, Boys to Men. And he makes hardly anything, nothing. And the reason that is because that whatever dollar that generates, it's being split 90 different ways. So you're getting 10 cents when it comes back. And a lot of you don't understand this. So I want to walk through some of the steps today. On this Instagram feed, we kept going back and forth. Something I'm going to get into the end of this thing was this chick actually believes she's going to manifest. She believes in positive affirmation and manifestation and that she's going to somehow like an Avenger, manifest a different royalty payment system. And she's going to manifest a world where corporations and publishers and CEOs are willing to allow you and me to make as much, if not more money than they do. Now, and I responded to her and I said, look, all the more power to you. You know, if you're Dark Phoenix over there and you've got this power to manifest all this shit, I'm all for it. Manifest the fuck away. But let me break this down for you a little bit. And here's a new way I want you to think about this. Now, I say it all the time. Radio is irrelevant. And it is. It's becoming less relevant every day. But having been in this business so long, that is where we used to make the lion's share of our money, was radio, songwriters. That's where we made the money. I want to break this down so it may be a little bit easier for you to understand. Here's how I want you to think about radio. There are different classifications of markets when it comes to radio. You've got major markets, large markets, medium markets, small markets, unranked, and then internet radio. Now, here's how I want you to think. A lot of you, every single one of you out there, despite the last 5 years of me teaching you and telling you not to chase radio, especially as an independent artist, it's not even obtainable or achievable for you. Some of you keep doing it. You keep going after it. So let me break this down for you from a financial standpoint. Here's how I want you to think of it. I want you to think of major markets equaling a dollar. Large markets equal a quarter. Medium markets equal a dime. Small markets equal a nickel. Unranked markets, which are your mom and pop, you know, the hometown radio station, those that are not ranked. Think of those as pennies. And internet radio as free. So let's say you're a new artist and you put a song out there and you hire an independent radio promoter and you're chasing, let's say, like the Music Row, New Music Weekly, all of that kind of stuff, even Billboard and BDS and media base indicator stations. All of those stations are going to fall somewhere between unranked and medium market. So when you put a single out there, you are going to bring back pennies, nickels, and dimes for the airplay that you're getting. In order for you to step up and go to that next level, your single's going to have to be played in large markets and major markets, which that's when you get into your quarters and your dollars. See, different radio stations in different cities are weighted differently. That's why I've come up with this little scale. Los Angeles is a major market, so it's a dollar. Let's say you get a spin, it's worth a dollar. It's not, by the way. This is speculative. This is purely for example purposes. But for example, you get a spin on a radio station in Los Angeles, it's worth a dollar. That same spin on a radio station in your hometown is worth a penny. A lot of you don't understand this game. A lot of you don't understand how these things are weighted. The radio stations and the markets are weighted. The bigger the market, the heavier the weight. That's why I tell you constantly, the Music Row chart, New Music Weekly, none of these charts, none of them matter. The spin counts are wrong. It doesn't matter. But even if you want to chase that from a financial standpoint, you are chasing pennies, nickels, and dimes. None of you are ever going to get to the point unless you sign a major label record deal to where you're getting any of the quarters or any of the dollars that come associated with spins and airplay from large and major markets. That's the financial aspect of how radio works. Now, if any of you have a publishing deal and a major label record deal in order to get to the quarters and the dollars, you're not going to see a penny of it. Because your publisher is taking all of the money from you. They own all the publishing. So you're not even going to see that money. That's how radio breaks down. Now, let's look at mechanical royalties. This is the other way that we used to make money. And that's why I got to a point where I didn't care if I had a single. Just get me a cut on a major label artist, because if you get a cut on a major label artist that is a successful artist, most of the time they want that album to go platinum. So they're going to print 500,000 initial copies, or they're going to print a million copies. That's why everybody back in the day wanted on Garth Brooks Records, because Garth Brooks was notorious. Capitol would print a million copies to ship. Well, the current statutory rate for mechanicals is around 9 cents per unit. Now, we got to divide that up. That's 9 cents per song. That 9 cents, so, you know, you've got, let's say, 10 songs on a record. That's 90 cents of every record is going to be distributed among every publisher and every songwriter that it took to make up those 10 songs. Add on top of that, most of the time, you're not even going to get the full 9 cents collectively, because they ask for a reduced rate, 50% rate or a 75% rate. So very, very rarely are you actually in that rare air of getting 9 cents per song. Now, I want to make sure you understand this. This is not you making 9 cents per copy. This is 9 cents per song. So let's say you do get this cut on a major label artist. Let's say you do get a Garth Brooks cut, and they're going to print 1 million copies to ship to retail. And your song on that record for every unit is going to get 9 cents. Let's just say you're going to get full boat. Like I said, rare air up there. But let's say, especially Garth Brooks records, he never paid full rate, ever. He's notorious for that. Love the guy, but he's also a very shrewd businessman. And he knew what the value of having a song on his records were for songwriters. And he exploited that and took advantage of it. But again, like I've said a million times, this is the music business. This is not the music friendship. This is the music business. So let's say you get that cut on that Garth Brooks record. And you're going to get full boat. And that song, your song, is going to get 9 cents per copy. They print 1 million copies, a lot of fucking money. But let's say your song you wrote with another person. Well, now that song's worth 4.5 cents. Let's say you wrote that song with 3 other people. Now that song for you is worth 3 cents. Let's say there were 4 writers. Now it's 2.25 cents. And even more today, if you look at liner notes, nobody buys CDs anymore. So you don't know who wrote what. But it's very common today for there to be 4, 5, 6, 7 writers on a song. Let's just even say there's 5 on your song on Garth Brooks Records, on this Garth Brooks record. You're getting 1.8 cents. So even on a million, you're barely going to make anything. Let me see if I can do this quickly. 1 million times 1.8. What, $1,800? Is that what it is? $18,000 maybe? That's what you're going to make on mechanical royalties for having a song on a major label artist. Now, let's say, best case scenario, you wrote it with 1 other person. Very, very few solo writes get on these records. Let's say it's 4.5 cents for you, 4.5 cents for your co-writer. Let's say you have a publishing deal, because you're not going to get on a Garth Brooks record without a publishing deal. Period. End of story. If you've signed a publishing deal, in most publishing deals, it states in the contract that the publisher gets the mechanical royalties, or at least a split. So you're not even going to get that. Now, the overall problem is, even major artists, they are not printing the number of CDs that they used to print, because they're not selling them. Everything's digital. So mechanical royalties are gone. I mean, you can go on Songfile at Harry Fox right now, and you can pay your mechanical and compulsory license to, let's say, cover a song that Garth Brooks did, and it's not going to cost you anything. Up to 10,000 downloads, it's going to cost you $30. Again, that $30 goes through the same funnel and filter as the way that it used to. It goes to the publishers. Do you have a split with your publisher? How many co-writes? How many co-writers are on the song? So you're starting to get the picture here. People sit and they wonder what happened to the music business. I'm telling you what happened to the music business. I am describing to you why songwriting is no longer a viable profession. But at the end, I'm also going to tell you how you can recover from that. All right, now let's go. Well, yeah, Steve, we are in a digital world. We get it. We understand it. Let's go to Spotify. At Spotify, and this is taking into account, I've told you all songwriters, if you want to have any chance whatsoever of succeeding in this business, you've got to become the vehicle for your song. You've got to be as unencumbered as possible, which means no publishing deal, no marketing and distribution deal, with nobody else putting in money but you. Nobody that you've got to split the pie with. Because the pie is not enough to feed everybody. The pie is enough to feed 1 or 2 people. So we're in a digital age. How do we make money on Spotify? We don't. Period. End of story. Spotify pays 0.001 cents per stream. That roughly equates to $1 per thousand streams. So you get 100,000 streams on Spotify. Very few of you out there listening have 100,000 streams on Spotify. You want to, but what does that make you? That puts $100 in your bank account. So what is that? You know, you sell these people, I got 1 million streams on Spotify. Awesome. So you made $1,000. Maybe. You see what I'm saying? 0.001 cents per stream. $1 per thousand streams. Now let's go over a publishing deal. You think the key to getting all of this money that now no longer exists, you sign a publishing deal, you're going to get major label cuts, you're going to get mechanical licenses, licensing fees, you're going to make all this money from this major artist because they are going to get major and large market radio spins. They're going to get those quarters and those dollars, which is going to fall down to you. All right, let's go through it. So a beginner publishing deal in Nashville, L.A., $1,200 to $1,500 per month. That's $14,400 to $18,000 per year. The average cost of a studio one-bedroom apartment in Nashville now is over $1,000. If you want to live anywhere safe. Yeah, you can go live in the hood. You can go live in the ghetto and find something for, you know, $650, $700. But if you want to live anywhere safe, it's going to cost you $1,000. I'll tell you, when we sold our house to get ready to move to Los Angeles, and before we got the house in Los Angeles, we knew we needed to be ready to go. So, you know, we moved out of our big, beautiful, nice house into an apartment. Our apartment is about $2,700 a month in Nashville. Yeah, we live in a nice place, but it's not that nice. You know, you move out of a 3,600 square foot house and into a 1,398 square foot apartment that's almost more than your mortgage was. So how do you pay to live to be able to fulfill your obligation to the publishing company, which is in order to fulfill your obligation, you're going to be writing every day, sometimes twice a day. You're going to be at their leisure. I mean, they're going to set rights for you. And a lot of times they're going to have you write as much as humanly possible because their philosophy is more bullets in the gun, right? We've talked about that and it makes sense. Most songwriters end up overperforming their publishing deal by hundreds and hundreds, if not thousands of percents. Most publishing deals in a beginner publishing deal is like a you know, what they want you to do is write 12, what equates to 12 solo songs per year. So that can be 24 co-writes. It can be 36 three-ways. Divide that however you want, but it's got to equal up to 12 full solo writes. If you're writing every day, you're going to fulfill that quota in 3 months, if not sooner. So where the publishing company is paying you to write 12 full songs, most songwriters, because, you know, we're eager, we want to be writing, we want to be building relationships. So we're writing every day, 2-3 times a day. Sometimes we're writing 7 days a week. You're going to end up giving the publishing company about 1,000% more than what they paid you for. And there is a thing that goes around with professional writers. I have to admit, I've done it before. I would keep track. I was not going to write that much more than what they paid me to write. Now, they were paying me a fuckload more than $14,000 a year. But I'm not going to give them something free. If I did, then my mentality was more bullets in the gun. That was it. I'm going to overperform. You paid me for X amount of songs, but, you know, I'm going to turn in 35, 40, 50 times that. And the only reason I'm willing to do that and give you something for free is that that gives you more songs to pitch, which means I have a better shot of getting a cut. The misunderstanding that I lived under for all of those years was that even when I played the more bullets in the gun game, I still didn't understand that even when those things happened, I was not going to make the kind of money that I thought I was going to make. That's why as soon as I could, I got out of my publishing deal and I did co-publishing deals to where I didn't accept the draw. I didn't take their money. I didn't take their salary. I would sign a co-publishing deal where they would represent my songs, represent my catalog. They would provide all of the administration. They would do all of the creative end. And I just wrote, and in exchange for them doing that end, they got a certain percentage. And I never did a co-publishing deal that was over 50%. That's when I started making money. Having hits and having a hit or hits and having a publishing deal is still not livable wage. Very rarely is a livable wage. Now, there are some, if you are one of the darlings in town and you are one of the chosen ones, there is enough of your writer side of your publishing that you could live very nice. But in order to get that, you're going to consistently have those hits, like two or three at a time. You can point to songwriters. I know them. I'm very good friends with several of them who had publishing deals, full publishing deals. They were drawing, you know, $65,000, $70,000, $80,000 a year from the publisher, which in Nashville up to 3 or 4 years ago would provide you a really nice living. But they consistently had hits because they were with the biggest publishing company in town, and that publishing company was the sister to a major record label, and they made sure that these writers had cuts on every major artist that was coming out. So they would have 2, 3, or 4 number ones every year. Well, if you're getting $80,000 from your publishing deal, and let's say you even make $30,000 on your writer side, $40,000, even up to $50,000 on your writer side of each one of those, you have, let's say $50,000, and you have 6 of those a year, that's $300,000. So you're making $380,000 that year. That's not bad. But that is one out of every 10,000 writers in this town. That the number of people who are accomplishing that over the last 5 years, I could count on 2 hands. It may be a little bit more than that. It's less than 50 people. Think of everybody in Nashville that's chasing this dream, that's writing songs, that's even signed to a, out of it. There are less than 50 people that are making that as a songwriter in town. And I guarantee you, if I know 3 or 4 personally that make that amount of money just purely from songwriting. And I know of others that I just don't know personally, but it's probably not even 50. So even getting a publishing deal is not the answer to your question, not the answer to your problem. What is the answer to the problem? Okay, here's where I want to turn. I told you at the beginning, I was going to tell you why YouTube for me is something that I want to focus on. There are two areas when it comes to earning revenue on YouTube. There's the CPM and the RPM. The CPM is what YouTube charges per 1,000 views to advertisers to advertise on your videos. The RPM is what you make per 1,000 views. How much of that advertising dollar are you earning? Now, I want to make this very clear. The CPM and the RPM can vary per video, they vary per month, they vary per day. That's why it's important to make engaging content that people watch longer. They watch more than the first 3 minutes of your videos. But if I take an average of my channel's CPM, or rather RPM, which is what I make, is $6.27 per 1,000. Video views. Now, I checked that this morning before I sat down to do this. I have not been doing YouTube the way that I used to for at least a year. So I've not been making that kind of content. Back when I was, my CPM, My overall average on any given moment when I would go in and check, it would be close to $15 per 1,000. my current CPM, and I haven't uploaded a video to YouTube in weeks. It's been maybe even a month and a half, 2 months. My current RPM, I'm sorry, I keep saying CPM. The CPM is the amount that YouTube gets. RPM is what you get. My current RPM is $6.27, having not uploaded anything and just letting the videos that are on my channel continue to earn revenue. So my current RPM is $6.27 per thousand. Again, your RPM can vary per video, per day. It can fluctuate and change. The better content you make and the longer people watch it, the more that CPM and that RPM goes up. I have some videos that are on my channel that are currently earning me $160 per thousand views. So when people hit me with, Steve, I just don't get YouTube. I don't understand how you make money on YouTube. That's how you make money on YouTube. Catalog. It's almost like the music business in a way. It's like the more videos you have on your channel, the more money you're going to make. The more consistent you are, the more money you're going to make. The more interesting content that people watch for a longer time, the more value per thousand views that those have. So when I look at it today and I sit down and I look and I go, my average CPM over the hundreds of videos as it stands today, my average RPM is $6.27 per thousand views. Now let's compare that. Spotify pays me $1 per thousand. So already having 1,000 views, listens, whatever, however you want to classify YouTube, is almost six and a half times more valuable than 1,000 streams on Spotify. It's more valuable than getting a major label. Well, I mean, look at this. Mechanicals. We go back to Mechanicals. 9 cents per song. They print 1,000 copies. You're going to make, what, $100? So having 1,000 views on YouTube is more valuable than your mechanical license, mechanical royalties as a songwriter on a record. And it's certainly more valuable than the sum of what's going to add up when you get radio airplay on internet radio, unranked radio stations, small market radio stations, and medium market radio stations, because that's a game of cents. This is why I keep pushing YouTube on you guys. Like I said, I've got, looking at it now, I've got some that have a $47 RPM, some that have a $20 RPM, some that have a $4 RPM. Some that have $160 RPM. Why in the world would you focus on Spotify knowing that YouTube is going to pay you six times the amount? Now, it's going to take consistency. It's going to take persistence. It's going to take sacrifice. You're going to have to commit to creating great content. And no, a lot of video, I'm not talking about you just sitting down and performing a song and doing that. Is that going to get a lot of views? If you don't have a large fan base, no, it's not going to get a lot of views, but maybe that's not what you should be doing. Maybe sitting down with your fucking guitar isn't what you're supposed to be doing. If the overall goal is to earn money and make money, which should be, and this is one of the things I told her in this comment on this Instagram thing, was passion has no place in the music business. None. Passion doesn't pay your bills. If you want to do this professionally, then you've got to think about the dollars and cents of it. You can't, you're not, and this is another thing I told her, and I said, look, I'm not trying to be condescending, so please don't take it that way, but you're young. I don't know how young she is, but she's probably in her early 20s. I'm 45. I said, you started your career during this streaming era. So you're used to getting screwed. You entered the business getting screwed. You're going to continue to get screwed. You don't know what it was like to get $20,000, $30,000, $100,000, $200,000, $300,000 checks that today those checks are $450. You've not been around to witness and see the decline of the music business overall, but specifically the decline of the possibility of songwriting being a viable profession and career, a career that at one time you could provide for your family, a very nice living for your family. You could send your kids to private school. You could drive a nice car. You could have a nice house. Those days are over. And that's why I told her, I'm not being condescending. You're just young. You don't understand how far we've fallen. And the guy on his Instagram was like, you know, look, it's the Music Modernization Act was a step in the right direction. And I commented back and I said, yes, it is a step forward. But we took 1,000 steps back. So we're net 999 to go. We took 1,000 steps back and the Music Modernization Act took one step forward. I don't want to create a bleak picture for you guys. But at least one or two, three times a day, sometimes I get DMs from you guys. I get emails from you guys. Steve, why do you not want to talk about the music business? Why are you not? I mean, you've spent your life doing this. Why are you walking away from it? Because there's no future. And who knows? Maybe this chick is going to be able to pull an Avenger Dark Phoenix thing and manifest a better music industry. I don't think so. But who knows? Maybe she's got that inner power. Maybe she can accomplish that. More power to her. The reason I'm not focusing on it is because the game, it has become a game and profession and business of splitting cents. And I've got a family. I've got kids. I can't provide for my family on cents. But I'm giving you the alternative. Now, you can talk about social media. You can use social media to drive content to your YouTube channel. You can start a membership platform. There are a lot of different ways we've talked about in the past that you can monetize your community. Writing songs is not going to help you develop a community. I'll even go one step further and say, really, in all honesty, being an artist isn't going to develop a community. You've got to do more. More than anything, you've got to create the kind of content that people are interested in, not that you're interested in, not that you want to make. And look, that's a part of the sacrifice of this deal. I know right now there is a video that I could go set up the cameras, I could set up the microphones, I could make a video right now that would, over the next month, would probably make me $1,000, $1,200, $1,500 on YouTube, having to do with music distribution. But I'm not doing it because I don't want to do it. I don't want to do a video on music distribution. I do one video every year, even though I know it makes me a lot of money, relatively, over time. That's the other thing about YouTube. All this stuff is evergreen. As your community grows, it's just going to get more and more and more and more views, which means it's making more and more and more and more money. Think of this, like I think of YouTube, here's how I think about it. I think of every day, every video on my channel is going out there and making money for me. Every video. The more videos you have on your channel, the more opportunities for money on a daily basis that you have. Part of the sacrifice is going to be having to really take a hard look at it and go, okay, I don't really want to make this kind of content, but I know I can make money making this kind of content. Why are people so willing to do that in other areas of their life, but not willing to do this? I know a ton of songwriters right now that are walking that are signed to publishing deals, that are walking into writers' rooms today, writing with writers they don't want to write with, writing the songs they don't want to write, all to keep collecting that check. But when I talk about YouTube, they're like, no, I don't want to make videos about that. I don't want to do that. I'm so focused on this. And we've talked about this in the past. We get focused on this thing and think we know what our goals are. We know how we define success. But most of the time, we put too tight and strict of a definition on that and think that it's not success unless it comes to us in the exact form that we want it to. when we could just maybe step off to a parallel path and go achieve everything we've ever wanted. But we keep ourselves from that success. We keep ourselves from achieving those things we want to achieve because we're headstrong in making sure that we achieve them in the manner in which we want to achieve them. We want that success to come to us exactly as we've pictured it. We want it wrapped in the packaging with the bow on it the way we've always imagined, instead of going, oh, look over there. There's a straight path to get to exactly what I want to get to. So I wanted to go over this with you guys today and really break this down, because it never ceases to amaze me the number of new songwriters and artists, and I'll be honest with you, even a lot of people who have been in the business for a while do not understand the dollars and cents of the music industry. They don't get it. They don't understand it. They don't understand why they get a cut on a major artist and don't make any money. They don't understand why they get 3 million streams on Spotify and don't make any money. They don't understand why they've got, they're on the Music Row chart and they're sitting at number 22 and they've getting all these reports from their independent radio promoter going, oh, we're getting 50,000 spins this week. They don't understand why they don't make any money. It's because you're playing a game of split cents. That's not where the money's found anymore. I'm telling you guys, that number right there. Right now, my current RPM on YouTube is $6.27. I know that right now, today, on average, even though I've got some that are making 25, 30 times that and some that are making half of that, worst case scenario, today, every 1,000 views I get on YouTube is going to pay me $6.27. That is at 9 cents. That's 6 times, 7, almost 8 times mechanical getting a cut on a record. That's 8 times the mechanical royalty rate. We go back to Spotify being at $1 per 1,000. It's 6 times 1,000 streams on Spotify. Why would you do anything else? Go where the money's at. Now that you know the dollars and cents of this business and you know what's possible and what's not possible, now you've got to sit down and have a conversation with yourself and find out where you go from here. Do you want to take the information that I've given you and continue to do things you know that are not going to lead you? Or are you going to be one of these other, like this chick who thinks she can manifest a different system? Look, I'm all about being positive. I'm all about positive affirmation. I love it, but I'm a realist. I love the thought of manifestation, the secret, all of that shit, and being able to manifest and, you know, think karma and you think positively and positive things. Bullshit. The harder I work, the luckier I get. The harder I work, the more positive things I manifest. I cannot sit around all day and trust me, I've been trying to manifest a Lamborghini out in the driveway for 10 years. It has not shown up. And believe you me, I've had positive thoughts. I believe it can happen. I could sit here all day long. It's not going to happen until I bust my fucking ass and I go get the money and I go to the dealership and I buy it. That's when it's going to happen. You can't manifest shit, because if you could manifest shit, you wouldn't be in the situation you're in right now. You would have manifested a completely different scenario and set of circumstances for yourself. I love to hear these people talk about positive affirmation and manifestation. Then why the fuck are you in the situation you're in? If it's possible, why are you sitting around talking about needing to manifest anything else? If you can do it, why the fuck haven't you done it? And that's a big thing going around right now. It's a big thing with younger artists. My issue with it is that it gives you somehow license and permission to not have to sacrifice, to not have to put in the work that everybody else put in, to not have to do any of that. You can do half of it, but just wish upon it. I can manifest it if I'm just positive enough. And you focus on being positive instead of focusing on the hard work, instead of focusing on the fact that you're going to have to sacrifice. You are not going to be successful at anything. You are not going to be able to manifest yourself out of the sacrifice part of being successful. I'm sorry, it's impossible. Unless you have a rich granddaddy, a rich grandma, rich mommy and daddy who are just going to pass down that wealth to you. And that's a lot of times what you see. You see this out in California a lot too. People talk about positive affirmation and manifestation. Have you ever noticed the people that say that positive affirmation and manifestation worked for them? They were wealthy to begin with, or they had wealthy beginnings. They had somebody, grandma bought a house in 1960 in Manhattan Beach, California for $40,000. Today it's worth $28 million. She just died and passed it on to you. And your thing, I told you guys, I manifest. No, your grandmother died and left you a $28 million fucking house. That's how you manifested it. Real people that accomplish real things and have real success that build something for themselves, we don't have time to stand around and worry about positive affirmation and worry about manifesting things in our life. We put our big boy and big girl underoos on and we go to work. And we realize that anything that comes our way, it's not a result of positive affirmation or visualization or manifestation. It comes to us as a result of our hard work of getting down there in the dirt and scrapping and scraping and making it happen one day after the other. I have a feeling I'm going to want to talk more about this. As you can tell, I get very heated. I get very frustrated when I see privileged young people talk about manifestation and positive affirmation. You were born with a silver spoon up your ass. You've never known anything but positive manifestation because everybody around you has done nothing but manufactured positive manifestation. Get kicked in the dick several times. It's been a long time since I've said this, and I want to wrap up today with this. I used to get asked all the time, Steve, really, what's it like being in the music business? Like, what's it like being in the industry, even at the highest level? What's it truly like? And I'll tell you all again. Being in the music industry, being in the entertainment industry, being an entrepreneur is like getting up every single morning, walking over to your partner and asking them to kick you square in the nuts. Every single day. That's what it's like. And if you're not on board for that and you can't handle that, you have no business being in this business. You need to go work for somebody else. You need to go work at a bank. You need to go get a degree. You need to learn a trade. You need to learn something else, but you don't have what it takes to be an entrepreneur. If you can't get up every single morning and get kicked in the nuts and keep going, you don't have what it takes. You need to go do something else. This is a business of sense. It's made up of sense. How can you take advantage of it? I've given you a road today and I hope you listened. Guys, don't forget to rate, review, and subscribe to the podcast. Leave us a written review. Take 60 seconds on Apple Podcast. I'd appreciate it. If you haven't joined the Outsiders yet, go to thestevefreeman.com and join up. Some cool stuff is going to be starting to go out here probably next week. Some regular stuff on like Wednesdays and Fridays, I believe. No, it'll go out on Tuesdays and Thursdays because the podcast comes out on Mondays and Fridays. So it'll go out Tuesdays and Thursdays. Yeah, that's what it is. Go over there and sign up. If you're not already, follow me on social media at the Steve Freeman. Guys, until next episode, dream big, work harder. The Steve Freeman Podcast is brought to you by the Empire Podcast Network. For any information regarding this podcast or our other podcasts, visit empirepodnet.com.